This is Talk Back Gardening with Deb Tribe and Sophie Thompson.
On 891, ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Good morning and welcome to Talk Back Gardening. Good morning, Sophie, and happy Valentine's Day to you.
Good morning, Deb, and the same to you.
Thank you so much. Well, you are always telling us the adage about when to plant a tree, Sophie.
I am. The best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. The next best time is today, while we're here in February, and we might suggest that people don't plant necessarily in February. You know, from autumn onwards, if you're thinking of planting a tree, you need to be thinking about what variety you want. And I know around here, you know, I predicted where I needed to put some trees in, but there's a couple of spots I missed, and I've been thinking about what tree would grow best. So we've got the expert to give us his suggestions.
Wonderful. We're going to catch up with Ben Freeman in just a moment. But if you have a tree question and you would like to throw it in the direction of both Sophie and Ben, the phone line is 1300 222 891. We always love your comments on the text line, which is 0467922891. I have a couple of magazines to give away a little bit later in the program, as usual, one by phone and one by text. But shade is a really big thing that you talk about a lot, Sophie, and we do need to create microclimates around our homes to protect us from the rising temperatures. And I think climate change is only making the creation of shade a more vital concern. So if you, like me, are wondering, you know, what to plant around your home, what will fit around your home, let's ask the man who is joining us now from Freshford Plant Nursery. That is Ben Freeman. Good morning, Ben.
Good morning. How are you?
We're great, thank you.
Now, Ben, that's right. Your nursery is a family business and it's been in business for over 100 years, so you really are advanced tree professionals. And one of the things that, you know, I tell people to think about when you're thinking about a tree, what do you want from it? You know, do you want flowers? Do you want shade? But the first thing really is you've got to decide on the size. Do you want a small tree or a medium tree or a large tree? Now, what do you call a small tree?
So in our field, we basically refer to smaller trees is basically, well, we have small, medium, large. So our smaller size trees, generally, we kind of say is more that 5 to 6 metre grower. And then we
Can I just ask, 5 to 6 metres when? 5 to 6 metres within 10 years or immediately or, you know? I mean, that's the thing.
Generally, that's a full. So different trees will take different times to get to those, but you'd usually say in that 10 to 20 year range.
Okay,
to get
beautiful.
There.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. Yep. And so what's a medium tree then, Ben?
So medium tree, we generally say anywhere kind of from that 6 to 12 metre range. And again, anywhere. So similar time frame. They generally, you know, a smaller tree generally takes longer to get to that, you know, to its desired height, and a bit like a medium and a large. So I'd still stay in that 10 to 20 year range of you know, getting to its full desired height. And different trees will go to different sizes in different climates as well, which we've seen a lot of. So
absolutely. Yeah. And so what's a large tree? Is that over 12 metres?
So, like, yeah, generally large tree can be, you know, 12 metres to 30 metres. The sky's the limit in a large tree. So they're kind of like your, you know, your big classic trees that you generally find at your parks and some of those types of trees. But, yeah, they're, again, similar time frame. Some of those trees will take longer to get to. Some of those trees are, you know, very longevity that will last, you know, multiple people's lifetime. They're a legacy tree. So a lot of those large trees can be those legacy trees that you see at parks that are, you know, 100 years old plus type of thing, but you need the land to be able to put them. So, yeah.
Absolutely. And can I say, having just moved to a new property, I'm blessed to have a legacy carob tree, which is monstrous, but it is the most valuable thing I have when we get, you know, temperatures in the mid to high 40s, not only for me, but for all the other creatures that are sharing our property. But let's start with the beginning. The other thing you've got to think about, it's not only the size, it's whether you want deciduous or evergreen.
Correct. Yeah, correct. So we generally find, especially in the smaller tree, like, to get a tree, you know, in the 5 to 6 metre range, you do struggle a little bit in that, you know, in the department of shade. But There is definitely for those smaller gardens, you can pick that. It's also picking the right tree, especially in today's climate, that works, can handle conditions. And, you know, with subdivisions going further and further out now too, we need to pick stuff that's hardy and it's going to cope with climates and everything else. So, yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about your top five small growers.
So my top five. All right.
Yeah.
So the list I've kind of got with all species is kind of using a bit of my, I suppose, background knowledge to what we do is a lot of council supply, large commercial, that kind of stuff. So starting at the top, one of the surprise trees we've found a lot is actually Hibiscus rubra, which is a cottonwood tree. We originally, you do see a lot of these in home gardens as more of a shrubby type hedgy tree. We've actually started in the landscape field, have actually started pruning these up to be more a small medium tree. But looking at them, they're very lush. They have beautiful flower, but they seem, we've got a lot that have been heading out to development out, especially out north and the like, and they've really been one that's been performing quite well, considering they don't look like they're going to be a hardy tree. So they're a great tree. Not so good in the Adelaide Hills. Unfortunately, the frost does tend to, damage them quite well. But down on the plains, it's a great little nuggety tree, which can also act as a bush. Yeah. Yep.
And the thing I think you mentioned, because they're on a street in Unley, and they've been planted as street trees, but they haven't lifted the canopy. So they're actually causing a bit of chaos because it's a tiny little narrow footpath. So the key is, if you want it as a tree, to leg it up, you know, take it up above your head height.
Correct, yeah. There's a lot of trees, I think, and we've been speaking to a lot of councils, is there's a lot of trees on the market that actually are, you know, they've always been looked at as shrub-type trees. And there's a lot of trees out there, I think, that are, you know, just because they're seen as a shrub doesn't mean that they can't be lifted up and grown as that small, you know, good-sized small. Fitinia robusta is another one that, you know, you see a lot as a hedge, but there's no reason why something like that couldn't be grown up as a tree. So there's a lot of trees, I think, that are, well, a lot of plants, should I say, that are looked past because they're assumed as they're a hedge, if you know what I mean. So, yeah.
Absolutely. Okay. And now your next one is one that I love and you can see all over Adelaide in the harshest conditions, and that's a crepe myrtle. But you've recommended the one called Sue, which is quite upright and vase-shaped.
Yeah, so I mean, you've got you've got a broad range of crepe myrtles. Sue's more of one of those 4 to 5 metre growers, again, for a smaller garden. I mean, crepe myrtle-wise in the Lagerstroemias, you've got a broad range of different size, different colours. But for a smaller garden, we've done a lot of those, you know, all throughout Adelaide. Great colour, autumn colour, and then as they get older, they kind of get a mottly kind of, within their bark and so forth. So, yeah, great little small tree. As I said, in the crepe myrtle range, you've got a broad range of colours and sizes, but it's one that kind of fits the bill in that smaller
okay.
size.
Okay, and for people that don't know, Sue has a bright pink flower and sort of a vase shape. Right. Now, your next tree is one of my favourites. And I had a number of these at Mount Barker in my previous garden. I'm going to plant more of these out here. And it's the Wilga or Gidra, Wilga, dreadful name, but the Wilga is a beautiful evergreen tree.
It is, It's a little bit of an ugly duckling to start with. It's a very slow grower, but believe it or not, it's a tree councils have actually found that it grows well in dolomite, of all things. So it's one of those. I remember first seeing a line of them going out to Port Wakefield, going down one of the main streets, and you look out there and you kind of go, it's such an arid place. And yet we're finding that it's a great, in Adelaide it seems to get more of a kind of 6 to 7 metres. I have been told interstate it does get larger, but here, once they finally get going, they're a great little nuggety tree, and they kind of have that, little kind of slender leaf. Very, once established, more that hardiness is one of their key factors, and we're finding more developments, councils and the like are planting a lot of them. So
very graceful foliage, incredibly tough. It's sort of, you know, can take desert conditions, so really cold and really hot, and it has pretty little white flowers, so it is a gorgeous tree. Now, the Brachychiton So this whole group of flame trees is beautiful, but there are dwarf grafted varieties.
There are. So there's a whole range of the main ones you generally see driving around. There's probably a mix of. There's one called Geraldry Red, Bella Pink, and a Griffith Pink, and they're all grafted to be more that in that range of anywhere to 6 to 8 metres. But they're just a being from the Brachychiton family, very, you know, they have a very thick trunk. So basically, they kind of have in a kind of windy area or an area where you want that stability in form. They're a great little nuggety tree once established. They also, again, have a really nice flower, being evergreen. They work quite well as well. So they kind of have that, you know, that appeal. And as they get older, they kind of get quite a nice buttress in the base of them as well. So they kind of, they tick a lot of boxes in form, in size, and even just the, you know, how they hold together, which is a great attribute. So, yeah.
And then the next one on your list, so this is the fifth of the small growers, is Circus, which is sometimes called a Judas tree.
Correct.
And you're a fan of both the red and the green leaf forms.
Yeah. So Circus, I mean, you've got Circus siloquastrum, which is probably the hardier of them. But Circus siloquastrum, Circus canadensis, which is the two green leaf forms, are probably slightly hardier than, say, the forest pansy, which is more of it. But again, it's has a brilliant little heart kind of shaped leaf with a nice pink flower that comes up in the spring into summer. But great little all-round tree that gets to that 5-6 metre mark, quite hardy and adaptable. So, yeah, it works quite well in a whole range of different soils, which is a plus. So,
and it's a deciduous tree. And one of the things I love about the Circus, there's actually a book written about them because they flower on old wood. And there's this book that I read where the Circus is basically, you know, inspiration for people to, you know, do amazing things, whatever age. So they're a great tree. Medium trees. Now, this is obviously, you know, someone's going to have either a property in the hills or a large block in town. So, you know, less people are probably in the market for medium trees. But your first tree, I'm looking out my window, I'm out in the desert and I've planted one of these, and it's a Chinese pistachio.
Correct, yeah. So Chinese pistachio would have to be, it's probably up there as one of my top, the beautiful autumn colour that they get. They're a tree, again, probably one of the most used trees with councils. We've found that in the last few years. But, yeah, probably a good 7 to 8 metre grower, as a great autumn colour. They even tend, some of the ones I've seen around the place, you know, hold generally good form with questionable branching structures as well, which is great. And they seem to handle good warm, you know, some of those warm climate areas as well, which as a tree, they're just a kind of good, tough, nuggety, deciduous, again, with good foliage and form. So,
if you want to see them colouring up over the next couple of months, go to Harndorf in the main street. There are some beautiful Chinese pistachios that colour up and just take your breath away when they're in autumn colour. And then you've got an ash tree. Now, this is one that, you know, it's possibly very hardy, but possibly less blingy than some of the others.
Fractionus herbdell is, as I said, in that ash family. You've got obviously Claridae. There's a whole range of ashes, but we just find there's a few that we've seen around. Again, there's a lot in different subdivisions and so forth. The bigger leaf, to me, it has like a darker outer leaf with a grey under. It's kind of a little bit magnolia. In the way it has a grey underside with a dark green outer edge, but it's a great grower. Form wise, again, it seems to get up union wise and so forth in the branching structures. They seem to hold well, handle compacted soils and will withstand levels of drought as well. But in that kind of to get a good shade tree, we found there's some good examples around the place within the shade area, which is great. So
absolutely. And then you've got Tristaniopsis, which is I'm having a mental block on the common name, Queensland box. Sorry, You've got one called Luscious. Now, these trees are not always loved by people if they're a street tree because they drop a little nut.
Yeah, they do drop a little nut. So, the Tristaniopsis larina luscious is a superior form. So it has less of that kind of nut to them. But again, as an evergreen, they're very showy in the leaf. They kind of grow around in that range of 7 to 10 meters. They can get up to 6 to 7 wide, but glossy leaf, and they have that. They work well on whole range of different areas. I mean, we're in our state. We're fast. You're Australian natives and eucalypts. We're always looking for that next evergreen tree and that seems to be one we've found in the last few years that's kind of really stepping up in being where it's being used. It seems to be a tree that's quite flashy in having that, you know, that evergreen appeal. So yeah.
Absolutely. And then two more in the medium range, and because, you know, obviously trees are my favourite topic, so I could talk for hours and then we'll just rush through the large. So you've got a form of the lemon-scented gum, which grafted.
Sensuous.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. So that one, again, with the grafted sensuous, there is a few different ones in that similar size. So you've got a sensuous, there's another one called baby citron, and I think there's a couple others as well. But being grafted, they are seem to be more of a 7 to 8 metre grower, but they're very uniform. So you can plant a line of these grafted citradora and they look very identical. So having that grafted aspect involved, it actually brings them to quite a uniform grower, which is great. And as I said, they have that appeal. They have a really nice flower, great foliage, but they also have, a beautiful little white flower. It's one of those, again, they have been getting more and more well used all over the place, and being a native, it's kind of one of those that, you know, it doesn't get to that 15, 20 metres like, you know, some of the others do, and especially a straight form, Citradora may. So, yeah.
Is there one more in that medium category?
Is.
Yep.
Yes, we got one more. So the other one that I had was an Ace and Agundo Sensation. Aces, I find in the current climate that we're starting to see, there's a lot of aces these days that struggle with obviously the heat that we start seeing, especially that summer. You can get a lot that burn in the 40 plus degree days, especially with a little bit of wind. But we find the Negundo Sensation is just one of those that's coming from that Negundo background. It has more of that hardy aspect. So it handles certain element of urban heat, has attractive autumn foliage, and it's fast growing and it has good branch structure. So again, a lot of aces, they grow great up in the Adelaide Hills, but it's hard to find aces that work, especially in the more suburban areas that don't burn in the heart of the summers we see.
Okay. So, Ben Freeman from Freshford Plant Nursery has given us his top 5 small and medium trees to provide shade. We'll get into his large ones in just a moment.
This is Talk Back Gardening with Deb Tribe and Sophie Thompson.
On 891 ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Sophie Thompson and Ben Freeman are talking trees. Now, we've got Ben back to give us his large tree recommendations. Ben, over to you.
All righty. So the large ones, one of my favourites would have to be the Ficus macrophylla, the Moreton Bay fig. Again, a classic tree that you see in parks, grows great, has that kind of added appeal with the larger roots that kind of pop out the ground as they get up. A tree that, again, you need a big property to have. So that's one of the ones that, great in parks, works well in cold climates as well. So, yeah.
And you've got three beautiful deciduous large trees. And these trees we can see, you know, the Chinese elm is the tree down the main street of Mount Barker. You've got Zolkova, which are in the main street of Kapunda. You've got the Canary Island oak. These are all magnificent large trees that are just a delight.
Out of all of those trees, as I said, they're all kind of those bigger growing. Probably one of them said the Quercus canariensis is probably one of mine that I've always, you know, always it's under. I find an underused tree, but out of all of those, they're all great growers and have their place, especially in that larger property sense. So
And then there's one more evergreen, so Corymbia maculata, which is, you know, a spotted gum, obviously a large gum, but beautiful and stately.
Yeah, it is. So, again, having that larger leaf, they kind of, again, give shade. You see them planted all over the place. They do handle levels of drought, which is good as well. And that, you know, the older trees do also get mottling in their trunks as they get older. So they kind of have a good appeal all round. So
fantastic list. I'm sure there's going to be lots of people listening to this conversation again. And you know, the thing I would say too, that you know, sometimes people get a bit angsty over the size a tree's going to get in 20 years. In 20 years, when our climate is harsher than it is now, we're going to be grateful for the trees we planted 20 years ago. There's a beautiful saying about a wise man sits under the plants a tree, the shade of which he'll never get to sit under. And, you know, we can, you know, if you want to see beautiful trees, go to the Botanic Gardens on a 40-degree day, walk around and just feel the difference that those trees make. It's so important.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, 100% right.
Yeah, exactly, Sophie. And just a bit of listener feedback for you, Ben. A couple of listeners warning that cotton tree do have roots that can get into pipes. So obviously with all of the advice you're giving, you have to be aware of where you plant the tree.
Correct,
Yeah, and someone else is saying Queensland box are great for pumping up street green coverage numbers, but the one in front of my house killed everything in my front yard, and that can happen. Laura in Queenstown says, I love my pocket-sized mallees in my small suburban garden, and but Sue from Glenelgie says, we have a Queensland box and it's an ideal tree for shade and it looks beautiful. Mm. Now, Karen is on the line from Lower Mitcham. Now, Karen, you've got some advice on what to plant. Good morning.
Oh, good morning, and thank you for taking my call. We're actually moved our suburb. We're now up in Greenwick area, and we've got a home which has got a very long, narrow strip with a very harsh northwesterly aspect. And along the fence line, we have a small area. I'll just get some measurements here so you can actually hear them. The soil area is about 900 wide, and it's actually been in a problem where the fence was incorrectly laid. So we've actually got a concrete strip going down there inside of about 300 millimetres, sorry. And because it's so harsh, we're sort of wondering, what should we do to soften up the heat? Should we plant a tree there, or put some sort of pergola mechanism there? I'm not sure.
Yeah, well, it is. We do find that's a very tricky size area to find a tree that goes in that area, because having something that kind of narrow, you're very restricted in what you can, unless it can get up and kind of billow out, which is a tricky thing. So yeah, some of those type things, we actually say it may be easier going down the path of, you know, planting something like a lily, something that you can hedge back in form more so than a tree, because a lot of your trees generally, you know, even some of the minimums will only grow around that 2 metres, you know, 2 metres plus wide. So it is a tricky kind of scenario when you've only got a small space to put something in. So, yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you. Does that answer your question, Karen?
That certainly helps.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it is unfortunately not yet that kind of something quite narrow like that. We'd nearly suggest kind of going maybe not a tree as such, but maybe more of a hedging type tree that you can keep pruned into that area. So
would a lily pilly survive that harsh heat, because it's absolutely excruciatingly hot out there?
Yeah, that's
what I'm worried about. How am I going to manage? What tree is going to survive that heat?
It might be a tricky one.
And can I say that also down the track, you know, if you are thinking of the pergola, it might be that you put the pergola with something on top and a hedge as well, so it sort of creates a more protected microclimate. And then the fact that you know that the hedge will get shade down the track will give you protection.
Good luck. I hope you get the right tree, Karen, for the job. Just on the text line, Clint, who I'm pretty sure I met yesterday at A Taste of the Fringe, says, for tree planting on your property, I've sometimes wondered what council requirements are, species and sizes, etc. I planted a macadamia in my prospect front yard and crossed my fingers that it would go nuts. Another tree idea for smaller property spaces is to make a deal with your neighbour and grow an A and B type avocado because they need companion fruiting. Thank you, Clint. I guess it depends on the council what they want, does it, Ben?
It does, yeah. Different councils have different requirements, but you've also got to maintain trees, especially, you know, if you're rural living around power lines, and there's a whole list of different trees and requirements depending on where you live. But, yeah, especially things like power lines is something that you need to consider, where you're planting and where that tree will end up in height and so forth. So
yeah, and quite a few people saying, we live near the beach, we get lots of strong wind. What's your recommendation?
My recommendation from down, it really depends on how coastal you are. We find Metrosideros worked it well down the beach. In pockets, we've even seen things like Chinese elms down through Victor. But it really, coastal is very hard, depending on how much wind, you know, how much wind and the like you're actually, well, sea breeze, should I say, you're getting. So. Things I know within councils, Metrosideros is one that I know we've done a lot, with different, some of the more the councils. But, yeah, it's always a tricky one to find what works in those scenarios, because it depends on the wind and the like and the salt spray and that kind of stuff. So,
No, there is a lot to think about when you're planting your tree, but you've got lots of ideas there from Ben. Now, they all had pretty complicated names. So many people saying, can you print it? Can you print it? Now, Sophie, I don't know whether you're able to put it in your newsletter, but certainly I have sent it off to our newsletter guru, and hopefully that will be in our newsletter. So make sure you subscribe to the 891 ABC Radio Adelaide newsletter, and we'll put Ben's suggestions there for your trees to grow in that in the coming weeks. I'm not sure when the next release is. It's fortnightly, so make sure that you join up. Well, Sophie, a lot to think about there. Ben, thank you so much for joining us this morning. Really
thanks
appreciate it. Ben Freeman from Freshford Plant Nursery put a lot of work into that list. Sophie, so many things to consider there.
Absolutely, and it all comes down to getting the right advice from a knowledgeable nursery person. So, you know, if you are down near the coast, visit your local nursery or garden centre, not just a retailer, not just a plant retailer. You've got to go somewhere where there are people that live in the area, they know your conditions, and they're going to give you the right advice because they want you to have success. They don't want you to be back buying another tree because the first one died.
Exactly, and talking about the right advice, Sophie is here to give it to you. So please call in on 1300 222 891 with your gardening questions. Sophie, very happy to take your calls.
This is Talkback Gardening with Deb Tribe and Sophie Thompson
on 891 ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Good morning and welcome to Talkback Gardening. Happy Valentine's Day to you, Sophie.
Happy happy Valentine's Day to you too, Deb, and all our listeners.
Exactly, and we've all got a lot of love for our gardens, so it's a perfect day for Talkback Gardening. We've been talking about trees this morning, and we've had some lovely texts. Graham from Manham says, I have planted many native gums and grevilleas in my block at Manham and absolutely love the classic mallee tree, the one used for firewood. Where could I purchase them from? Well, you would say go local, I imagine, Sophie.
I would, and because I live, in the Mid-Murray region, so if you go to our local Landcare, which is based at Cambrai, she has a whole lot of different mallee species. And, Amy Linky is an amazing font of knowledge, so do head along there. They're based next to the council office in Cambrai themselves.
Oh, that's lovely. And this texter says, I'm thrilled with just how our Pyrus wintergreen evergreen ornamental pear trees are growing here in Bordertown. Planted in October 2023, have captured our house in the background for scale and size. They're beautiful. Thank you for the photograph. No lawn around them at all. I give them an overnight deep water weekly during summer and play it by ear at other times. I only liquid fertilise with a seaweed-based fertiliser monthly. Our garden is based on plants suited for the Mediterranean basin, and that's where the text runs out. I'm sorry. We can't fit any more than that in. And Jackie at West Croydon says, I have two weeping cerces canadensis red buds. Mm-hmm. One has dark burgundy leaves and the other is weeping covey lavender twist with lime coloured leaves. I adore them. Perfect for my small front garden, a lovely small feature tree, and they've been quite resilient through the heat wave. So thank you for sharing your success stories with your trees with us. Lots of questions. Let's dive into them. I'll have a couple of magazines to give away a little bit later. The phone line 1300 222 891. The text line 0467 922 891. Now, Tom is in Harndorf. Good morning, Tom.
Morning. How are you going?
Good, thank you. You've got some curling leaves on your plum tree.
Yeah, my Satsuma plum had leaf curl this season, and I only got about 25% of the fruit that I would usually get, and I'm just sort of wondering what to do with it.
Okay, so basically there are two things that cause the leaves to twist, and often that's usually insect damage. So there are often little black aphids hiding underneath the curling leaf, and the aphids start sucking the sap and the tree responds by protecting them. So did you notice if that's what you had, Tom?
Yeah, that is what I had.
That is okay. So looking ahead, the best thing you can do for the tree now basically is, you know, feed it going into autumn. But looking ahead, you need to have more flowers in your garden. And why is that important? Because the flowers will bring in the beneficials and the beneficials will manage those aphids. So the sorts of flowers you need to make sure you've got around your garden are either daisies. Now, calendulas are a great example. They'll self-seed, have them near your fruit trees, and they're going to bring in all sorts of things from ladybirds and hoverflies and things like that. Another thing that you want to plant is a form of saltbush. Now, saltbush is a random one, but any type of saltbush, they're a big saltbush, they're a dwarf saltbush, but saltbush harbours the highest number of beneficial bugs of any native plant, and they also harbour a whole lot of what we call parasitoids. Now, when you get those little aphids, there are a number of things that they're parasitic wasps, and so saltbush will bring those in. So really, as far as what you can do right now, basically you need to feed your trees strong and healthy going into next year and make sure you've got more flowers around. So next year when the aphids start, the good bugs come in and clean them up for you. I used to have 100 and something trees, including lots of plums and things in the orchard in my previous property. And I did have flowers self-seeding, and most times I'd see the aphids start to come, and then if I kept an eye on it, next thing you know, I'd see, you know, ladybird larvae or parasitised aphids, and I didn't need to do anything. Nature kept it under control for me.
Okay. Should I remove the damaged leaves and stuff from the tree now?
Well, I would say the aphids are gone now, right? So I would just let it go. Those leaves will drop off soon enough. The most important thing, I mean, if you've got chooks and you have chooks free ranging underneath, they can help a bit because they can, you know, manage insect populations. But no, I'd just be feeding your tree. We just want it to be strong and healthy coming into spring next year.
Perfect.
Thanks,
all the best,
Tom. Yeah, that's great. Thank you very much for calling in. Now, Caroline is in Adelaide with a newly planted fig tree. Welcome, Caroline.
Hi, guys. Thank you for taking my call today and happy Valentine's Day to you all.
Same to you.
My question is just regarding a fig tree that we planted about 7 years ago. It was from a cutting from a tree that produced the most beautiful, succulent, juicy figs, very sweet. And unfortunately, our tree, though it's growing beautifully and does produce fruit, they don't seem to ripen. They just stay green and hard. I was wondering what we're doing wrong.
Okay. Can you tell me, do you give it a hard prune in wintertime, Caroline?
I think perhaps my husband's done that maybe twice in the 7 years, but not every year.
So if you give your trees a really hard, so if you don't prune them hard in wintertime, they produce two crops. And the first crop is sometimes called, or is called a Breba crop. And that is often disappointing, okay? And it can be hard and not very nice. Whereas when you do the really hard prune in winter, because figs fruit on new growth, then you get a better crop later, if that makes sense. So try this year, give it a really, you know, you can almost skeletonize them, you know, take them back really hard, keep it manageable so then you can net it too. I think you'll find that's the key. So the first crop is not necessarily a good crop and most people don't worry about it at all. They just prune hard in winter to get a great crop in autumn.
Okay, I will do that. Thank you so much. It would be nice to get some figs.
Absolutely.
One of my favourite fruits.
Me too. I've got four fig trees in out here and they've already got fruit on their first year. I'm so excited.
Oh, great. Well, thank you. Thank you for that advice and we'll take that on board and have a lovely day. Thank you.
Thank you, Caroline. I hope you do too. And figs are the fruit you eat when you feel like chocolate, in my view. They're about the only thing that, you know, satisfies that rich craving. Sally is in Stirling with a maple tree question. Hi, Sally.
Hi. Thanks, Sophie, for taking the call. I have a maple tree that is medium. I'd say it's about 6 metres, 7 metres high. I've been in this property for 5 years and it's been fabulous. In the last 12 months, it's gone, it's losing all its foliage. Branches and pieces are falling off, dead. I've given it foliage feeder and lots of water, but I don't seem to be getting very far.
Okay, can you tell me, is this a Japanese maple or one of the bigger maples?
I think it's a bigger one. I have another Japanese one which is quite small. Yeah. No, this is a bigger one, yes.
Okay, and can you tell me, is it dealing with any root competition from big gums or,
There's a big tulip tree next door which is, you know, only probably 2 or 3 metres from it over the fence. Yeah. I've also got some camellias beside it and most of the camellias in my garden are fantastic. This one is going very yellow and it's really tall. It's nearly as tall as the maple, but it's going very yellow.
Okay, so there's something going wrong in that area then, isn't there? And without seeing it, it's a bit hard to tell. I mean, you know, obviously water is the first thing you look at. Even though you say this maple's been doing well, last year was the driest year on record. So whether it started to struggle last year and basically kept on, I'm not sure. I'd be taking some photos of the area along to Cleveland Nursery in the main street of Stirling and see if they've got any suggestions and take some leaves. Have you got a possum problem, Sally?
No, I don't. I've got gigantic oak trees up the back.
Yeah,
And there are possums in it, but they're not.
Yeah.
They're not causing a problem down near the house.
Okay. So I think we need to do further investigation because obviously, you know, any tree is an asset, and when something goes wrong, you need to work out what's causing it.
Sure. Okay,
all the best
I'll go
with that,
back
Sally.
And talk to them. Thank you very much.
All the best.
Thank you for calling, Sally. The number 1-300-222-891. The text line 0467-922-891. Now, Ian is from Morfett Vale and you've got a mandarin tree question. Hi, Ian.
Yes, hello. Thank you for my call. And Happy Valentine's Day.
Thanks.
My problem is that I can't really remember when I was given it as a birthday present, but it'd be something like 2 or 3 years ago. Definitely not last year. It's only no more than 2 metres high, I would estimate.
Yep.
My question is that it hasn't flowered. So how long do I have to wait for it to flower?
Okay, so you know, a new mandarin might take 2 to 3 years to fruit. So it could well be that it's coming up to that now. The most important thing is that you keep it healthy in the meantime. So, you know, make sure the leaves are healthy and green, make sure it's well fed. I would be using a balanced organic fertilizer that's suitable for fruiting plants. There are some that are, you know, specifically designed for citrus and other fruiting things. And I would say from, you know, if you're not sure how old it is, maybe it's you've had it for 2 years. So make sure it's well fed, and from now on, you should expect fruit in the next year or so.
Yes, I had a supplementary question, not
yep.
on the same thing. Yes, in that period, however long it's been, it's never been pruned. Is that all right?
Oh, look, when a young, you know, I would just be inclined to leave it and get it flowering and fruiting first.
Yeah.
And, you know, the most important thing is that it stays healthy. So I wouldn't necessarily worry about pruning it, but I would be, you know, making sure that it's well fed. So, you know, make sure that you're giving it a balanced organic fertiliser suitable for citrus, Ian.
Good luck, Ian. Hope it goes well for you. You are listening to Talk That Gardening with Sophie Thompson. I'm Deb Tribe. We have a couple of ABC Gardening Australia magazines to give away. If you're listening on digital radio or on your TV or your computer and you would like to win a magazine, send through a text with your full name and postal address on 0467 922 891. If you're listening on analog, you might want to call through on 1300 222 891.
This is Talk Back Gardening with Deb Tribe and Sophie Thompson.
On 891, ABC Radio Adelaide, South Australia and Broken Hill.
Let's go to Ranella. Tim, you've got a bonsai fruit tree. Hello. Ooh.
Hi, not a fruit tree. It's a crepe myrtle, but yes, it's a developing bonsai.
Oh, beautiful.
And I decided I want to try an air layer. I've not had any success with air layer, but this one looks like it's taken. I've got roots growing in sphagnum moss. I'm just not sure whether I should chop it now, being that we're getting towards the end of growing season. I planted or air layered it back in October, or should I hold off till late winter, early spring when it's back in its fresh growing season?
Okay, I would hold off till winter because it's a deciduous plant. And if you cut it and pot it in winter coming into spring, it'll be fine. I mean, I've never tried air layering a crepe myrtle, so I'm delighted to hear it's been successful for you. But I have two bonsai that I was given by someone, and I think they're 20 years old, and they're crepe myrtles, and they've been pruned, so they're like these 20-year-old ancient, beautiful flowering trees, and I absolutely love them.
Yep, yes. Unfortunately, my last crepe myrtle I managed to kill, so hopefully this one I will manage to keep growing for that long.
Absolutely, yes. And you'll produce more.
Yes.
That's wonderful. Tim, thank you very much for calling in.
Thank you.
Lee is in Shido Park. Lee, you've got a question about fertilisers.
Yes. I have a few native plants, you know, little ones like knobby clubrush and kangaroo grass and the salt bushes, and I just wonder, does seaweed tonic work for that, or what kind of fertilizers do I give those type of plants?
Great question, Lee. The ones you talked about are naturally suited to our soils, our low nutrient soils. So if you didn't feed them, it wouldn't matter. If you did want to, let's say they've just gone in recently and, you know, we've had hot weather and you're a bit worried about them coping with the heat, seaweed-based plant tonic would certainly be fine. But, you know, the reality is that those plants are very suited to our climates. They're not from richer soils. They'll take our low nutrient soils and grow really well. There are organic native fertilizers out there, but when, you know, I'm planting thousands of local native plants, I'm not doing fertilizer for them because they're suited to my natural climate.
Oh, okay. That's great to hear. Yeah,
all
awesome.
The best.
Thank you so much.
All the best, Lee.
Thanks.
I will say that water is the best fertilizer you can give anything when it's over summer. So we'll, you know, include water as fertilizer.
Absolutely. Maggie is in Newton. Now, Maggie, you've got a name that Taylor has struggled with. I'm not even going to try it.
It's a Hakea nodosa. It's a type of Hakea.
Aha. Tell us about it, Maggie.
Yes, well, I planted it as a tube stock. Good morning, both of you. I planted it as a tube stock a year ago, and it's grown a little bit, and it looks healthy, but it's just very slow. And I just wondered, is that the nature of the tree, or is there something I can do to speed it up?
Oh, so I think that might be the nature of it. I mean, I'm not that familiar with it, but it comes from sort of probably more moist climates than our climate. So I would, you know, if you, and because it comes from more moist climates, so it's more the East Coast, probably more nutrient-rich soils too. So in your case, you know, if you've got some organic native plant fertilizer, it would be perfect for it because it will just give it a bit of a boost. Also, seaweed-based plant tonic would give it a boost. You know, if we're growing local native plants, they're adapted to our poor soils. If we're growing things that come from, you know, eastern states where their soils are richer, it probably would love a bit of feed.
Oh, is there a tree you could recommend as a native that would be similar or you? That would grow quicker.
Oh, okay. So, look, I would just head along. So, you know, where you are, Maggie, you could go to State Flora, you could go to Coromandel Native Plants. You know, there's all these fabulous nurseries that just specialise in native plants. And, you know, there's so many other conditions. When we've got a building site, well, when we've got a home site, we don't know what, you know, was there rubble left somewhere under the ground? Is it dealing with root competition from a big tree? All those sorts of factors can influence things. So right. If you don't think it's the right plant for you, maybe, you know, give it a spell for a couple of months, give it a feed, see if you see any difference. And yep. If you think you need something else as well, then I'd be heading along to one of the native plant specialists.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks,
all the
Maggie.
Best, Maggie.
Yep, lovely to hear from you.
Thank you, bye.
Thank you. Hunter is in Craigburn. Now, you've got a dragon fruit cactus, but no dragon fruit, Hunter.
Yeah, that's right. I planted it about 10 years ago from a cutting, and it would have been about 50 centimetres when I planted it. Now it's a couple of metres high, grown up a post along a fence, and it's got a lot of branches off it, and it started to flower about 3 years ago. Each year I get a few more flowers on it, but within a few days all the flower just drops off and then just goes back to its own thing.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, I've had no fruit yet.
Okay, I am going to suggest you touch base with the Rare Fruit Society or Joe's Connected Garden. I know Joe has different types of dragon fruit in their garden, and they're north of Adelaide too, so they would be able to help you understand what's not working there. You know, as I mentioned, I drive up the Northern Expressway and there is this orchard of dragon fruit growing near one of the temples and looks amazing. So get in touch with the Rare Fruit Society or Joe's Connected Garden on Facebook.
Okay, no worries.
Thanks, Hunter. Good luck in doing that. Now, congratulations to Carol in Mount Barker and Kath in Port Lincoln, who have won our magazines today. Now, we started the program talking about trees, Sophie, and a few people have been asking, are there trees that you can actually plant in lawn and have both the tree and the lawn?
Well, yes, there are, but I'm going to turn it around. There are lawns that are better with trees because if we're planting a tree, which is eventually going to give us shade, Cooch and Kikuyu don't really like a shaded area. So the best lawn to grow under trees, if you're putting trees in, is soft leaf buffalo. Now, that is also my favourite lawn. I've got two lawns out here. One literally only went in last week. I like that lawn best because if it gets in your garden beds, you can weed it out. Once Cooch and Kikuyu get in your garden bed, your only way of management really is to spray it out, unless you do the old spaded edge on the lawn. So understand that soft leaf buffalo will take semi-shade under trees, and so it's more that you choose your lawn for what you're going to grow there.
Very good advice. Now, coming back to Hunter's question on dragon fruit, this texter says, the moment the dragon fruit opens in the evening, stick your finger in it and run around to pollinate and do the same again the next morning, and that will help it to thrive. So thank you for that.
Nothing like a bit of twiddling.
Exactly. Nothing like a little bit of intervention to help things along. Penelope in Tanunda says, just on my way to the Open Garden Harvest Festival, so many gardens to visit. How exciting. Penelope, you know, you just get involved in everything. And there are 14 that you can see today. So head along today and tomorrow, in fact, and you can see all of them for $50, four of them for $25, and individual gardens for $10. Coming back to dragon fruit again, a lovely Vietnamese lady told me dragon fruit need to be grown up a pole and then let them hang down to get the fruit, says Hannah in Yankalilla.
I love it. Okay. Well, that's exactly how this orchard that I see on the Northern Expressway, it's next to the beautiful Asian temple. And, you know, there'd be 20 or more plants there and they're growing up a pole and hanging down. And there's actually a story where Tammy Huynh from Gardening Australia is in her parents' home where they've got a big section of dragon fruit.
Oh, that's wonderful. And someone else saying dragon fruit, some of them do need a pollinator. So lots of expertise in our Talkback Gardeners. It's wonderful. And Shirley from Tumby Bay has sent through a picture of a lily that grew in the garden. I'm wondering if you've ever seen a double lily before.
No, it's sort of obviously had some insect intervention, which has caused it to respond by creating a double flower. It looks very interesting. It's the old arum lily. But very interesting. Good on you, Shirley.
Yeah, I used to call them death lilies. Is that bad?
Well, I don't think we should do that. They're a beautiful plant, but they are an environmental weed too. So please don't grow them if you're, you know, please don't let them escape and end up causing problems in waterways. Yeah. Down the southwest of WA, they are a nightmare. So, yeah.
Keep them in the garden only. Don't let them escape. Christine says, I totally agree with you, Sophie, on buffalo. You can just drag it out of the garden as it doesn't take root the same way as Kikuyu or Kikuyu, however you want to pronounce it, does. Yep. Well, Sophie, another jam-packed talkback gardening. I'm going to try and get the recommendations of Ben Freeman from Freshford Plant Nursery on our newsletter. So,
beautiful.
Yeah, we'll make sure that we make that happen. So do stay tuned for that. And, of course, you can listen back to the podcast. That will be up early next week. And if you'd like to listen back before then, you can always listen back to anything on 891 ABC Radio Adelaide only up to a week after it's broadcast. And that should be available later today at abc.net.au/Adelaide. Click on the program, which is Weekends with me, Deb Tribe, and you'll be able to find it there between 8 and 9:30. Sophie, what have you got planned for the weekend?
I'm going to get a bit of time in the garden.
What a surprise.
And I am going to head to the Harvest Garden Festival too. Wonderful. So happy gardening to all our listeners and happy Valentine's Day. And what could be better than spending some time in your garden, which gives you joy?